Greetings to our audience all over the world. This is the Knowledge in Action podcast, once again coming to you with a hot topic. We are going to be having a critical conversation today, and what we are talking about is a comprehensive framework for climate justice. And in relation to that, we shall be talking about youth voices in climate justice, how to make sure that youth voices are centered in the conversation in climate justice to ensure that the solutions or the actions that are taken actually respond to the needs and aspirations of youth in our society. This podcast is brought to you by MSTCDC in Arusha, and it is produced in partnership with the Danida Fellowship Center. We are excited to come to you with knowledge, with learning, with lessons, and critical information that would be valuable for your work as a stakeholder in the climate justice conversation. In order to assist me in delivering this topic, I'm joined here by a powerful panel of excellencies who are going to be helping me lead this conversation. You must be asking, what makes them excellencies? These are the East Africa Community Youth Ambassadors, and they are joining us in this conversation so that you can be able to execute the matter at hand. I'm joined by Sarah Mutagoma. Her Excellency Sarah Mutagoma is the ESC Youth Ambassador for Rwanda.
Thank you.
I am also joined by Liz Esther Karukumutima, who is Her Excellency the Ambassador for Burundi.
Thank you.
I am equally joined by Edgar Mutunjisa, who is His Excellency the Ambassador for Uganda.
Yeah, thank you so much, though.
Thank you so much, my guests. And even as we proceed into the conversation, I need to give you some background as to how these three people have found themselves on this honorable table for our conversation on knowledge in action. Recently, in the month of July, we were able to send some of the East Africa Community Youth Ambassadors to the People's Dialogue in Denmark. The People's Dialogue Festival happens every year, and this year we were lucky to be able to send them there. Apart from sending them there, they participated in an event that was taking place at the People's Dialogue Festival, sponsored and supported by the Danida Fellowship Center, which is an SDG cause. And this SDG cause seeks to educate different constituents and different stakeholders on the SDGs. As part of that process, members of the youth advisory boards of the embassies of Denmark around the world were able to benefit from this training, and the East Africa Community Ambassadors were part of the lucky group that managed to access this training. As part of this training, they also developed an action plan at the end of the training, where they were designing a work plan to address SDG 13. Those of you who do not know what SDG 13 covers, this is the SDG that actually speaks to the matter of climate change, and it actually commits, Goal 13 commits to take urgent action to combat climate change and its impact. As part of this, they were focusing on Target 13, three, which talks about improving education, awareness raising, and human and institutional capacity on climate change mitigation, adaptation, impact reduction, and early warning systems on climate action. They have a beautiful action plan on this matter, and I want just to first of all get their thoughts on this topic and the relevance of this target in the SDGs before we proceed further into the conversation. I'm going to start with Sarah from my very extreme end. Please tell me, what are your thoughts about this topic? Why is goal 13 very important?
Okay, thank you. Why this is important: by advocating for this agenda, which is the ESC climate agenda, which includes youth inclusion in climate action, where they can actively participate in shaping policies that address the climate issues and voice their concerns to influence decision at the regional and national levels. This will lead to more effective climate policies, and also looking at the involvement, it empowers them and gives them access, like skills, and also a sense of purpose, which is an opportunity to develop their leadership skills in terms of climate action and positive change in our communities.
Liz, if I may bring you into the conversation, Sarah says that it will result in better policies and, of course, provide tools for different groups and constituencies to be able to participate in this conversation. What are your thoughts?
Well, why climate action first? It's the most urgent thing that we have now around the world. I don't know if you are paying attention to it. It's the most urgent SDG we have right now, and it's not because it's trending, but it's because it's affecting each sector of life, of the life of the worldwide, of the world life. And as youth and as young people, as agent of change, entrepreneurs, innovators, we thought that we need to do something. We need to develop an agenda to also be able to participate and do something about it. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Liz. I'm going to bring Edgar into the conversation. Why is this conversation important? Edgar, why is it critical that we create awareness and ensure that there's human and institutional capacity to address the climate crisis? And they provided a very broad framework to say that they would want capacity to address mitigation, adaptation, impact reduction, and early warning.
Thank you so much, Stella. I think for me, why this is very important and urgent is that there are very many realities unfolding now that have made it very clear that climate change is no longer just a conversation for the elite or one that's just for the future, but it's happening now. As we speak, just a few days or weeks ago, there was an issue flooding in New York, and that came just a few days after New York had hosted a climate summit. At the same time, we had floods just recently in Kampala. So last time during lockdown, we had locusts evade both here in Kenya, but also in Uganda. So all those things get to show to you that this climate problem is right here, it's not a conversation for the future or whoever. However, we also get to recognize that conversations around climate change are very technical and yet very important. And yet we all know that the principle of SDGs have always been two major principles behind SDGs and all these countries centered to them. One is leaving no one behind, but two is doing no harm. We believe that in this conversation of climate change, given the current capacity of the young people, we felt like they are being left behind because of how technical this conversation is, and yet even deeper because of how urgent it is. Because I need to further emphasize that beyond East African community, which is already known that we have almost over 65% of our population being composed of young people, they are struggling in Kampala, in businesses and everywhere in those streets. Ask yourself, when Kampala is flooded, who are the most affected by that? I think it should be the young people who are doing all these normal small businesses. So that's what makes it very urgent that they get to understand the conversation. And that's why we focus on that target number 3 of SDG 13.
It's amazing that you mentioned the groups that are largely affected by the climate crisis. I want to push a little further, Edgar. Is it just youth who bear the biggest burden of the climate crisis, or there are other groups that bear the biggest burden of the climate crisis?
Yes, thank you, Stella. I think it's not just youth who bear this burden, but I also think women generally. And this can be learned from when we had COVID-19 and there were restrictions everywhere. And you recognize that because there are all these many sort of small pedestrian businesses that were largely attained by to women, when lockdowns happened, most of them were affected because they couldn't be able to still trade on those streets. So the same conversation is going to happen, because when climate change happens and its impact and businesses get to be locked up, very many women who have been in these old streams are very deeply affected. After all, they're not yet fully entertained within the major sectors of the economies that exist. So I think women and youth are a very big component that will be uniquely affected by this conversation.
Sarah, you did mention that capacity building will lead to improved policies. Are you able to share with us what is the risk of not involving young people and women who bear the biggest brunt of the climate crisis? Are you able to share with us what is the risk of not involving them in designing climate policies?
Thank you. I always have this line that nothing for us without us. So if governments or institutions are making policies and they don't get to consider the youth so that they come with issues on ground and problems and challenges that they are really facing, they won't be able to come up with the solutions that are really needed in the society to address this climate change problem.
Mm-hmm. Liz, would you like to come in and just share with us some of the risks that we face if we leave women and young people out of this conversation or in development of the policies on the climate crisis?
Yeah, sure. Institution can just take policies without engaging the main stakeholders, the people that are actually directly affected by the consequences of those policies. So I think that the main thing to do is, before taking any policy, it's not just in climate, but
before taking any policy, we should first engage the main stakeholders.
The rallying call for the SDGs is leaving no one behind and causing no harm. And what we hear from this table is that we must ensure that the people who bear the biggest brunt of the climate crisis must be involved in the design of policies to address the climate crisis. As a matter of fact, they must be involved in designing the problem. What you hear the excellencies here saying is that in leaving these groups out, we are going to have policies that are not as comprehensive to address the climate crisis. But we need to go further and establish what then needs to happen in order for these groups to be empowered to be able to participate in processes of designing policies, because policy making processes are a bit complex and it requires some form of capacity building for this to happen. Edgar, I want to bring you back into the conversation. And one of the things I'm thinking about, even as Liz and Sarah were speaking, is that the target 13.3, actually target 3 of goal 3 talks about making sure that they incorporate lessons in the curricula, in teacher education, so that even teachers have the capacity to be able to teach this concept. And of course, student assessment, so that you're not just teaching the climate change situation or teaching the climate crisis for purposes of information, but for purposes of checking that the skills or the knowledge is turned into action. What is the value of engaging in this kind of a process, even as it is described by the target 3?
Yes, thank you so much. I think why it's very important that we create these things and somehow put them in our education systems, the climate conversation, is it emanates so much from our old African proverb. I don't know if it's only in Uganda, but we have something called Akati Kinko Akachiri Kabisi. Ideally is that you bend the tree when it's still young. So I think you cannot expect so much action to people that you just come and find them wherever they are and start telling them about this conversation. But also, realistically, I think there are very many little small things that are actually very important, because currently we have a problem of plastic pollution, but how does it start? This is something that a young person can take action without even needing to understand policy or go in any room or go to any country, if these are small, little, great habits that they could grow up with. And I think those little small habits that these people can learn just from school can be the greatest step even beyond the policy conversations. And I think that's why it's very important that we have it. This empowerment in our education system.
I have an extension question. Is this to say that there's something wrong with our education system as far as climate education is concerned? And if something is wrong with our education system, what are the gaps? What are some of those gaps that you think need to form part of your campaign, even as you talk about the climate education?
Okay, I think that's a very hard question, a little bit. Yeah, I think maybe the gaps I can think of right now is that I think there's really a big gap, because larger education system is so much on the scrum some sort of things and then reproduce them and then earn marks. And yet I think a normal education system in principle should be one that helps people develop solutions to their challenges. As you've already identified just in this podcast already, we all agree that climate change is our problem now. Therefore, an education system that is sensible ought to address that. And there are very small steps we can take. Currently, you don't have them. Just go and study biology, study very many things, go and sing in PE. Yet there are these behavioral things that we could change, because you are always blaming culture, African culture. You hold your plastic bottle, drop it anywhere, drop it everywhere. It's all these are small vices from which all this bigger problem has even emanated. Vices that could be easily solved by simply letting the young person know, and they can just take action. No so much English, no so much policy issues. As simple as that. So I think, there is really a gap, because we don't talk about these things. No one examines them. No one even wants to see how have you, in terms of behavior, changed and contributed to society. So I think this sort of behavioral approach to education, as opposed to the current one of just cramming things that we will never understand or that are not relevant, would be a great way to somehow revolutionize our education system and then make it sensible, but also address this challenge. I think that would be the gap that could be addressed.
Thank you very much, Edgar, for starting us off on that conversation on the importance of including this into our education system. But I want to hear from Liz. Liz, what are the gaps in our education system that we need to address in order for capacity to be built effectively?
Yes, the gaps, it's our education system doesn't provide enough tools for our kids, for our children, for the students to be equipped for the solution. So we have to resolve that gap, to equip them with tools, necessary tools, and the understanding of climate issues. Mm-hmm. Also, another thing that is needed is the grassroots engagement. You can't expect something to somebody that you that doesn't understand what is happening around, what is the issue. So those two things are very, very, very important.
Even as you talk about grassroots investment, let me push a little further. What is the place of indigenous knowledge? What is the place of known solutions? Because before the climate crisis, mm-hmm. our societies, especially in Africa, engaged in exercises in order to conserve our environment, mm-hmm. to take care of our seed, to ensure that there's continuous food production. How about that knowledge? Just apart from involving the grassroots, how about indigenous knowledge? What is the place of that knowledge in the education that we want to do?
Good point, Stella, because actually, according to the International Labour Organization, more than 65% in Eastern Africa are in agriculture. So directly, you think how much it's important, the climate issues, and how the farmers and those people are in agriculture are being affected directly. Those indigenous people or women who are in agriculture, we need to take them. We need to take them on board. We need to make them understand. Not in those only in those conferences when they speak English, when they present PowerPoint, when they speak very, very tough English, very, very tough language. You all know how much this topic is technical. Even for us who are here campaigning, advocating for this matter, it's really, really difficult. That's why there's a need in education, but there is also a need for collaborative project with CEOs. Those CEOs who are helping those indigenous people, those women in agriculture, they also need, apart from giving them seeds, teaching them modern agriculture, they also need to teach them how to mitigate those climate issues, how to prevent the climate issues, and what is the direct way to take. Thank you.
Sarah, I need to dig further into this topic because I have a special bias for the conversation on women's control over food, nutrition, and food sovereignty. Liz has actually spoken about the need for all the companies that are engaging in promotion of modern agriculture to consult communities on indigenous methods of agriculture and how they were valuable for our processes. Women were at the center of the knowledge on agriculture in the past. How do we center women and young women into this conversation? And what would need to happen to capacity building, knowledge transfer, for it to be useful for women and young women?
Okay, first thing first, you need to know the knowledge that they have, because there is a story I know of. Grandmas raised so many families, taking them to school, doing this and that, and they were not taught savings. So before you reach out to those people, you need to actually know the knowledge they have about it. You might actually be taking the solutions to them, thinking it's a new thing, and they already are familiar with the ways, the solutions. But the thing here is, are they aware that we're facing the climate change problems? To them, maybe they still live in the past world, traditional agriculture. It's one healthy way of living in societies, but it also adds another value if they know that what they're doing is actually contributing to the society and what they need to contribute more. So what I'm talking about is, if companies have solutions or projects on board that they need to take to these indigenous people, they need to know, they have to like analyze first the solutions that are on board already with these women, the knowledge they have, and then incorporate it to actually bring a bigger solution to the societies.
Her Excellency Sarah says that there are grannies, geezers in our society who were able to take their children to school all the way to university and to attain a tertiary education while they were living on $1 a day, without financial literacy training. This goes to tell you that there's knowledge they have that may not necessarily be resident in a bank or resident within a financial investment institution, but it is with them. The same case, she says and claims, applies to the climate justice conversation, that these women in the communities, these young people in the communities, have knowledge that has been transferred over the years that is critical for the climate justice conversation, and it needs to be incorporated into the knowledge that is being transferred as far as climate solutions are concerned. In order for this to happen, there's need for concerted effort to ensure that these groups are covered. But they also say you can only speak the language of a bird if you're a bird. The NIDA Fellowship Center discovered this a very long time ago, and they decided to convene young people in Denmark to teach them about the SDGs and help them develop action plans. This particular group of excellencies were able to develop an action plan on SDG Goal 13, target number 3 on capacity building and knowledge transfer to the groups that are especially vulnerable and carry the biggest brunt of the climate crisis. Allow me to indulge them again in this conversation to just find out further, what was this action plan about?
Thank you, Stella. So I think the action plan was majorly about getting the East African Community Youth Climate Action Agenda. The realization was that as much as we have like a general strategy on climate change, there was no sort of clear place of what are the aspirations of the young people, what they would want to see then, how they want to be involved. So we found it fit that given that we recognize all these many gaps, we did not also want to take it upon ourselves, just sit down and think we know all the problems. But we also knew for sure that for us to have real tangible action, it can't just be a one-day activity, a one-week activity to go and plant trees somewhere. It has to be something that has a clear structure, a good program, and can be sustainable for very many years. So therefore, we thought, and that sort of just maybe just doing split activities, can we design this program, gather the thoughts of the young people on how they want to participate in this conversation, or how do we best engage them at the regional level? And then maybe that can be like a guiding document over time, and then also to have very many people partner Xylem on board after the young people have agreed that maybe these are what their aspirations could be. So that was what the action plan was. And I think it was also in combination with the fact that we had very many people who were supporting the idea. And so we had a lot of support. As you talked about the NIDA Fellowship Center, it was, they recognized the importance of climate action as well. And many were able to be on board and say they're going to support the idea because they understand how cross-cutting issues of climate change can be. That it doesn't matter whether the other side you clean up cities or you do everything. If in one area of the world, whether it's in the global south or the global north, people are continuing to do harm to the environment, the effects, the harms of such actions will always catch up with you. So now we said, how then, if people already somehow understand this program, have our young people understand the ambitions, structure them, and then be able to rally from this goodwill and be sure that we can have sustainable conversation, sustainable impact on how we can participate in this climate action agenda and be able to have our projects around it and inspire action.
Sounds very interesting. I have the advantage of having taken a peek on your action plan, and I just wanted you to share it for the benefit of the audience. But I also saw that you intend to influence some policies. Are those policies that you're planning to influence policies on education, on the climate situation, or other forms of policies?
Oh, yes. It's partly what we want to do. But the first immediate step, that was be like the result. The first immediate step was one to influence at the regional level, at least, let there be acceptance that the young people, this is what they need, but also some level of commitment from them that this is what they can support. So that we don't just have this thing where people just feel like it's just their own struggle, but the community, the East African community, takes the first step to appreciate that they also have a responsibility. These are East Africans we're talking about, they're not citizens. And the East African community of this is, like I already explained, it's a regional problem. Then we expect that they be the ones to rally what these ambitions young people are. So it's more about a document of realizing that, hey, look, these aspirations of young people. I'm called the aspirations. You have a duty as the East African community, whether that, but also anyone who agrees to that, to pledge some support or some level of knowing that you have an obligation to these young East Africans who think that they should be governed in this way, who think that when you're making the investment decisions on maybe energy and fossil versus this is the approach you should take. So that can be ensured all the time when these people are making the decisions up there where young people major minority necessarily sit. So that then we are sure that at least the future, in rooms where we do not sit, do take care of the environment that we will live in. Because otherwise, then we'll have people just making policies, thinking about now and so much money. And before we know it, all the floods are everywhere and the buildings and skyscrapers you've put up no longer matter. So that's why we thought it's very urgent, but that's majorly the purpose to have to inspire action, but also have a clear guideline. Not that it's just a wishful thinking, but you can always hold to accountable all the leaders of the region, all the leaders that look, this is what the young people in November here sat and said, they want to be governed, this is the climate action, this is the urgency. Do you already support what their aspirations are?
Allow me to push you a little further. What would success look like at the end of your campaign?
Okay, so a success would look like, one, so we expect that I would like to have an endorsement from the Secretary General to accept that and maybe pledge support to this ambition that we would have collected. But we also look at our success as having the different young people, especially the leaders, we may not reach everyone, participate in this agenda so that at the end of the day, we have a document that you can all agree upon, an agenda that you can all agree upon from different countries. And that's why we are so much investing to find a ways of having consultations with these people. But even while we may not fully get them, you hope we'll have them at ULEAD so that we can at least have this conversation and agree and maybe validate that this is how we would want, that is what we want to see. So if that happens, but then later after that step, we have the Secretary General, the South African Community Secretariat, appreciate that and pledge support to that agenda. And then we can move in from there. The other partners can come on board, but that will be the first level of success. And then the other things and many activities we intend to run in different partner states are things we envision to do with all this support. Yeah, but for now, we'd want that sort of legitimacy and that sort of responsibility people to pledge that the aspirations of young people do matter and here they are, and then what would be your role supporting them?
Great. I think you have heard what success would look like. And there must be very many people in the audience who are as curious as I am. And maybe I would want Liz to be the one to respond to this part of the audience. What makes you and this team qualified to be the people to lead this process as the ESC Youth Ambassadors? What advantage do you have that other young people do not have that then everyone needs to take advantage of to ensure that this opportunity is not wasted?
Well, I'll not say I'm the most qualified, but I have the advantage of being where I am now. And us as a team, we promise to not waste it. We're going to serve them and then try to push them to their goal, to mobilize them. I'm sure the young people who have listened to this podcast knows the matter that we are speaking. They are facing those challenges, those consequences, those climate consequences daily. So we are not here as the most qualified, but we are here to save you.
The ESC Youth Ambassadors platform is an initiative of the Secretary General of the East Africa Community, and this is the platform through which he tries to motivate young people to participate in the promotion of regional integration in the East Africa community. And so this, ladies and gentlemen, are representatives of that platform, and they're going to be implementing this action plan together in order to ensure that then they can mobilize as many young people in the region to be able to support an agenda that, as you have heard from Edgar, is going to be shared with different platforms, and they are hoping that they can come out with an agenda paper that will also find its way into the negotiations at COP28 in Dubai in December this year. As they are engaging in this, there are certain things that they may want you to do in order to make this campaign work. I want to invite Sarah to just share with us, what should the young people do in order to make this campaign work? What do you need from them? What are you committing to give to them so that you make this process work and you're able to develop an agenda that will actually find its way into the COP conversation?
Right. The different contributions that the young people can bring to the table for this agenda to be made. Firstly is their innovations and creativity. I speak of in the wildlife part of conservation, I speak of the circular economy itself, different ideas that they can bring to the table to actually address this issue. There are so many projects that the government of Rwanda implements or puts in place so that young people can bring in their ideas, their solutions, so that they can be put in place. Edgar talked about the success that we envision if we are able to bring these people, to bring these innovations, the creativity, technology in climate action, climate justice, it's going to be something that we envision and say that even if the floods can come, I've implemented this thing. I've been able to create this machine. I've been able to create this awareness where if such situations happen in the communities, we are able to address them, the early warnings. We're able to have the solutions before we can actually face these problems in our communities. Secondly, there is the CSOs, the NYCs, and also our platform. We don't say that because we are selected, we don't take in ideas. In this project, we need everybody. We need everybody on board to bring in the solutions, to bring in the contributions. Everything is needed, not because we have like a project in place to be implemented. We don't need ideas or contributions that can be helped or can be taken into place, into considerations. If we're able to reach the ESC secretariat, young people can reach out to us. If you're not able to reach that level, we're here for you to come and bring in something, tell us this is that. If you're going to make a presentation on this, please include this so that together we can address this issue. So if they're addressing all this climate justice, climate action solutions, you are able to listen to something that you are able to contribute. So bringing them on board, this is how they can reach out to us. We can help in helping their voices be heard in very many ways, and also the innovation and the creativity. Thank you.
As you sit on this table, Sarah, you're representing the youth of Rwanda. Liz is representing the youth of Burundi. Edgar is representing the youth of Uganda. And there are other ambassadors who are representing other regions, including Her Excellency Wairimu Omanyala, who also went to Denmark with your team. What message do you have to the young people in terms of how they should prepare for this campaign that you're about to drive so that we make the product quality?
Okay. So advocating for this youth climate agenda is not just for us. It's for us as a whole East African youth, as a region. So your presence, your contributions, the opportunity for you guys to give in your thoughts on this and addressing the pressing issue on climate change and contributing in different ways is a sustainable thing that we can need in the East African region to develop ourselves and also ensure a future that's better, because you might think this doesn't concern me, but we are building a future generation for ourselves and the people to also come. So yeah.
Great. You may be asking yourself, what happened in Denmark? You want to have a snippet of what happened in Denmark. Let me allow Liz 5 seconds and Edgar 5 seconds to just tell you what the experience was like when they were in Denmark. Liz, if you could go first.
Okay. The experience in Denmark was amazing. First, we had a training of 3 weeks, and the training was about to provide knowledge about multi-stakeholders dialogue, campaigning and promoting SDGs at the core. But we also participated at the Folkomodet, which is the people meeting, where we have different people advocating for different things. But the most interesting about Folkomodet is that we were the people in power, the politicians, were very accessible, and we could ask question directly. So it was another perspective, another world, especially for us. Yeah.
Coming from a country where you don't access your politicians.
Imagine,
on a daily basis.
I even protested. for biodiversity. It was very, very amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know whether you had Liz pronounce some words in Danish. Things happen when people travel. Edgar, what was your experience like?
Yes, thanks so much. I think the experience was it was really fun. First of all, it was so much fun in the climate conversation. But also, I think that it was important to learn that people were actually very conscious of climate things. Like, you could meet people who are conscious to the point that I will not hold this phone because in the process of mining it involves this and this in DRC, and then there's suffering. So it was amazing. And these are not technical people. This is just average person. So that level of climate consciousness was very good. But also what happened in Denmark, beyond the climate conversation, we are also able to actually tell these people about the East African community. Some knew about the South African community, but some didn't. And so it was amazing seeing them learn new things about the South African community. I think it was something great. Oh, not to mention thing I cannot forget. We also had, I think, one of the best instructors. For the record, we had an instructor and engineer, Hans Peter, who was very awesome. It was very amazing. And because when even we were coming up with this action plan, and partly the reason why I really believe in it, because this is a person who has been designing many action plans for things like Plan International, CARE International, and all those big organizations. And so we're able to see through very many stakeholder analysis and the possibility and relevance of this. And that's why it somehow gives us so much confidence. This is something very tangible. Not to mention that we can take the advantage of the fact that we have a very friendly Secretary General. Currently, Dr. Peter Mathuki supports the young people of the agenda so much. And you are taking, all these opportunities. We cannot have such a great Secretary General at such a time with all these circumstances proving climate change's urgency. And then we leave them to waste. So this is why it's very important to take this opportunity, I think, so that we can be able to leverage on it and then be able to set this in motion and have it structured so that regardless in the future, whether we get maybe a less friendly SG, at least we will not have an opportunity to divert. It will have been formed and they are cast in stone. Yeah, thank you.
There you have it. MSTCDC and the Danita Fellowship Center would like to truly appreciate the East Africa Community Secretary General, His Excellency Dr. Peter Mathuki, for allowing us to send the East Africa Community Youth Ambassadors to Denmark for this SDG course. It has borne some fruit because there's a climate action plan that they are willing to implement. They're going to be implementing this campaign in the coming few days. Look out for some of their messages from their platforms, from their social media platforms, and some of the ULEAD platforms that we shall be announcing what the rollout of their campaign would look like. Participate, as Sarah has explained, be involved, make sure you give your opinions, make sure you give your ideas so that the agenda paper that they come up with will be a comprehensive agenda, as we have been trying to indicate in this conversation, that for us to have a comprehensive framework, we have to make sure that all the groups are involved, and their job and assignment in the coming days is to make sure the youth will be involved in this conversation. This podcast comes to you as part of a partnership by the MSTCDC and the Danida Fellowship Center, a partnership that seeks to promote learning and dialogue around democracy and governance, stability and green transition. You will be wise to join us in the next episode, where we're going to be having other conversations around the topics that we continue to promote learning around, and we continue to commit to learning and promoting the power of knowledge in action. From us, this is goodbye. Until next time.